Welcome to the Wealthy, Wealthy, Wise podcast, where you will get to listen in on the thought-provoking conversations with countercultural business, financial, and money thought leaders, sharing their wisdom and insights with your host, Christina Wise. Christina Wise is a highly successful serial entrepreneur, real estate investor, best-selling author, millionaire business and money coach, and the founder of the Wealthy, Wealthy brand. Christina has mastered the money game, and now her mission is to help everyone willing to do the work win the money game too. If you are looking to upgrade your financial life, stop worrying about money, and start living the fulfilling life you deserve, strap in, take a deep breath, and get ready to learn. This podcast will change the way you think about business, money, and wealth. Let's get into it.
Welcome back. This is Christina Wise. In this episode, I interview Amanda McMillan. Amanda is a top 1%er in the field of real estate. I've known Amanda for years and have always held her in the highest regard as one of the best real estate professionals in the entire industry. Last year, she sold over $50 million worth of real estate. She's a mom, she's a wife, she's an equestrian. She's overall amazing. In this episode, we focus on earnings as part of my ESI financial model. She shares her mindset and practices for how she earns over $1 million a year. And that's $1 million that she puts in her personal bank account, not revenue. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Amanda McMillan. Amanda, I'm so happy to have this conversation. We've never done this before. So I'm really looking forward to all the really amazing nuggets you're going to share with us today.
Thanks, Christine. I'm so so excited to be here with you and your listeners. As you know, I have you've been such an asset in my life, and I'm so glad that I could come back and share with some of your people too.
Well, let's let everybody know who you are. So, just share a little bit about. Tell us a story about Amanda. A little bit about your beginnings and what got you into the crazy industry you're in, and then we're going to talk about your success in that industry.
Awesome. Well. My name is Amanda McMillan. I live in Chicago, Illinois, which those that are listening from Chicago know that it's quite cold and quite snowy today, even almost a little unseasonably so. I've been in real estate now for almost 17 years, so it's been quite a ride. We've seen quite a bit of markets. It's a bit of a funny story how I got into the industry. I'm actually a third-generation real estate advisor. The part that's funny about it is that my parents spent most of my beginnings talking me out of that industry, really kind of advising me and pushing me in different directions. I think those that know me best now know that probably somewhere that pushing me in a different direction drove a passion inside me to come back and come back with a vengeance. So I did get into the industry after all of those years. And it's been quite a ride. Real estate for me is a love-hate relationship, something I have a tremendous amount of passion for. I have the ability to do it at a very analytical level, but it still has the way to create a very passionate experience for me. I've been fortunate enough to have quite a bit of success over the years. Since about, I want to say 2004, I've ranked in the top 1% of agents in the Chicagoland area. In more recent years, I've been in the top 25 to 50 agents in the city out of about 13,000. Those numbers are always important to me. What's more important to me is the fact that my business is almost 100% referral-based. And what's even more important is that all of my reviews online are glowing. I've always believed that I wanted to be the best in the industry, not the biggest. That's a real priority. And I do believe that at this point, we are pretty close to achieving that.
Well, you are such an idol of mine in the real estate industry. So let's talk about that a little bit. Many of my listeners, they're business owners, they're entrepreneurs, they're freelancers in many different industries. I do have a big real estate following since obviously that's been a big part of my career path as well. But those of us in real estate, but any business for that matter, what I'd like to talk to you about and really try to uncover is maybe principles or what you do differently that you think really does place you at the top of your game. Meaning in the industry, real estate is for the most part a mediocre business. There aren't that many in the industry that do really well. And so why is it, if we were going to uncover and really look under the hood of what Amanda does, compared to what, let's say, industry at large does and business principles. What do you boil those down to? What makes you different? I know one thing that makes you different. You just care. You're a professional. This is your profession. It's your full-time profession. You treat it like if you had a restaurant or if you had a car dealership or if you had a tech company, whatever business it was, you treat it exactly that, like a business. And you're a total professional in that business. Outside of that, what do you see that you do differently? What makes it that you are top 1% when there's a lot, you know, 99% is 99%?
It's a great question. And I think people are either going to love or hate my response. They're going to love it because in my mind, it's totally obtainable. There's nothing that I do that is, there's no magic sauce. There's no anything that you have to do that is so outside of the realm of what we are all capable of. So in that sense, I think people love it to know that this is within their grasp. On the other side, it is a tremendous amount of work. So, you know, really what it boils down to for me, the first thing that people always ask me is, when was that defining time? When did your career really go and blow up, for lack of a more professional word? When did you get to that point where you were really a sought after agent? Most people laugh to hear because I say the same thing every time. It was during the downturn, probably about 2009 to 2010, when most people were getting out of real estate because it was getting so tough to be out there. It was getting so tough to do sales. It was getting tough for everybody in most professions, not just real estate. It was getting tough to keep heads above water, especially for those that were independent contractors or self-employed or anything like that. During that time, no matter how much I needed anything, I made sure that my advice was true and what I really thought was in the best interest of the client. 9 times out of 10, I talked my clients out of buying and selling homes. Now, of course, every once in a while, somebody would look back at me and say, how do you get paid? Because obviously, if I talk all my clients out of doing business, then that's probably, in most people's minds, not the best business model. But The bigger picture is that my clients saw me as an actual advisor. They knew that my advice was even more true and accurate when I was telling them not to do something. And those people then found our relationships kind of went to the next level because they had so much confidence in what I had to say. When you tell somebody not to use your services, not to do something, and just because it's not in their best interest, you know, it resounds even louder than if you tell them, hey, this is really in your best interest. So when that happened, when I really started talking people out of doing business and people started trusting me, that's when I felt like it really started to go viral, that people then went to their friends, their family, everyone, hey, my real estate advisor, she gets it and she's advising in what's in the best interest. So first and foremost, 100% absolutely honesty. Honesty, tell them what you think is right, even if you're talking yourself out of the job. Even if you know they're going to be disappointed in what you say, and that's from as simple as telling somebody not to buy something to as monumental as telling them the correct price to price their home, that honesty will ring very true. You may lose some clients along the way, but if you're planning to do this or whatever the profession for more than 1 year, it's really a big thing. Following that, you know, it's really quite simple. I work hard. There's no way around it. The older I get, the smarter I try and work. So I really put a lot into creating systems. Everything that I do in a daily basis is written down. I don't want to do things twice that I've already done. So really trying to systematize it, understanding the business, understanding the procedure from those perspectives. And then at the end, I would say getting people, getting support, getting help for people that share your vision. Those things, I think right off the bat, are those ingredients will make almost any business very, very successful. Of course, then you also have to take in a look, and you know, you mentioned it before. I think what most of my clients will tell you they appreciate most about me is that I'm very analytical, I'm very thorough, but at the end of the day, I'm incredibly compassionate. Now, that's not, nobody will ever explain to me, say that I am overly emotional or gooey or compassion isn't the first word that when you meet me, you think, but it's probably one of the last, to be honest. But at the end of the transaction, they understand that I'm driven by the compassion to do my job well.
Yeah, and that you care. And the compassion that I see in the way you work is that you are absolutely looking out for their best interest. You're doing it for them, taking care of them, listening to them. What are their concerns? And you're acting on behalf of, based on your expertise and knowledge of what's best for them. And so few people either have the courage to actually stand up and say, no, this is the best thing for you. I know, because I do this every single day. And so that is where the compassion is this desire to help, this desire to make their life better, this desire and willingness to tell the truth, even when you might lose the deal or that they may not like what they are hearing right off the bat. And that's very uncommon.
Yeah, very. Yes. And like I said, I understand. And it's funny because I do mentor some of the newer agents and they laugh at me and they say, oh, man, it's really easy to say that now that you're at a position where the money doesn't matter. I mean, the one piece of advice that I give to anybody, at least getting into real estate, but I think it's true for most businesses, is you shouldn't be making your decisions on how you counsel your clients on the money. That should never come into the equation. I fully understand that that's hard for somebody that may be struggling to meet ends meet, but that's when businesses start to go sideways, and that's when it becomes a little bit more of a job and less of a career.
So let's talk about, in terms of a lot of my listeners, probably all of them, they have bought a house or will buy their next house, meaning if they own a house, they'll sell a house and probably buy another one. So for those who are listening from that capacity, what advice do you have for sellers and buyers when it comes to finding a professional and working with a professional? One, what questions might they ask? One, and two, what differentiates a good agent between like a professional agent like you from everyone else? And three, why is it important to use a professional over just somebody they find at an open house, for example?
Sure. Well, obviously I've done what I've done for a long time and people ask me all the time, am I fearful of my career becoming extinct because of all the information becoming online? And I think that kind of goes a little bit to what you asked. The reality is absolutely not. Information in any business, in any consumer's hands, can be a good thing, but can also be a very dangerous thing. Just because we can get our hands on information doesn't necessarily mean that we can interpret it and then put it to use. For example, I can go to YouTube and I can watch an open heart surgery if I wanted to, but then I don't think anybody would trust me to cut into them and see what's going on. Obviously, I'm making an extreme here, but to go through this, for most people, for most individuals, a home purchase or a home sale is going to be one of the largest financial and emotional transactions of their life. That's the reality of it. When you combine those two, this is going to be it. And to do so without proper guidance, I mean, when you say it that way, I think any consumer would say, well, geez, absolutely. I need an advisor to navigate those waters. Obviously, we're seeing pushes back in this. We do have people that buy without. We do have people that use limited services. I'm not saying that those people can't be successful in what they're doing, but I do believe that they are not setting themselves up for as much of a successful route as they could be. And unfortunately, a lot of those people don't know until later on. Sometimes they feel like they were successful. And I think it's going to be pretty interesting. Obviously, we've seen a lot of these limited service agencies pop up over the last 5 years or so and really become more popular. I think their success is going to be a little bit more telling in the next 5 to 10 years as we see the market balance out and market change, to see how those people are situated in the market, knowing that they didn't have advice and counsel. I know that a little bit more because I'm sitting down with those people now that maybe bought either without an agent or a different scenario. And a lot of times they're not in as good a position as they would have hoped to have been. Sometimes they are. There's always the opportunity to get lucky in those. But I do think that it is absolutely pivotal to line yourself up. And I would go on record to say, because obviously people talk a lot about the dollars associated with real estate advisors. I do think that if you went out there and you talked to just about every one of my clients in the last 17 years, I think most would say I've probably saved them money over the years. And I think a lot of them would say that they never felt like they overspent or did anything like that, because they worked with a consummate professional who not only helped them through the transaction, but help them years on years. I mean, the reality is I still help a client that bought a home from me 15 years ago, whether they need a recommendation, an idea, if they're going to do work and they want to make sure that it's available to be sold. So finding that professional, I think, is quite important. How you go about finding it, I'm a big person to talk to confident people you have confidence in, friends, family members, other people that have been in situations. They are a great place to start. The good news is that you can even go online now and see quite a bit of reviews, even if you don't have people in your own community. So I definitely rely quite a bit on that when I'm doing my own research. And then I think it's about interviewing and having conversations. Some people you're just going to understand and know and feel heard. To me, one of the biggest skill sets that most real estate advisors really lack in is hearing and listening skills. I think that's probably one of our most important qualities. So really finding somebody that is listening to your needs, wants, and desires, but then also on the same time, not just being an order taker. I've seen a large part of our industry go to become order takers. Look for somebody that is an advisor, has the ability to be consultative, has ideas. Even if they're not ideas that you want a thinker and a doer on your side, kind of leading your ship and guiding your team. So I think it's not necessarily, I don't think you have to say, how many houses did you sell or this or that. I think it's more about kind of asking them more situational, understanding, having conversations, kind of understanding and let them listen to you and see what they pick up. And at the end of the day, I say, you always have to trust your gut. As I tell my clients and people that I sit down with for the first time, you're gonna have a strong feeling on whether or not you feel confident in me or not. If you don't, then by all means, it's not a personal thing. It's a very personal journey for somebody to buy or sell a house. And not everyone, even an excellent agent, is going to work for everybody.
That's good. And so talk about how some of the risks associated with not getting advice or not getting good advice.
To me, this is pivotal because people always ask what I bring to the equation that other people don't. And I do believe that it is the advice, the counsel, and the strategy. Because there are certain things that everybody can do on at least a good level, if not an excessive level, but it's really the thought process behind it. You want somebody that can understand your needs, understand what you're trying to accomplish, and then put together strategy and plan. And I think this is the piece that a lot of people don't think about. And they say, oh, it's just real estate. There's strategy in just about everything that we do, from kind of the behind the scenes to what's happening. I don't think that, twofold, I don't think consumers quite understand everything that goes into what we do. And I think that there's probably a good amount of the profession that misses that boat too, of actually planning how we give our clients the road to success as smoothly as possible.
So I know a lot of people that go into the industry, come out of the industry, or part-time in the industry. What do you have to say about that? Like, what's been part of your longevity and doing it at still top of the game? You put in a lot of hours still. You're still passionate about it. You still every single day are as excited as you were the first day you started, if not more so.
I think at the end of the day, I'm incredibly fortunate because I get to work with amazing people. I mean, and that sounds terribly canned. But I really do. Part of that is because my business is almost all referral based. So I joke and say that my clients weed out the crazies. But the reality is I get to come into people's life and I have a skill set. I've refined my skill set. I'm constantly refining my skill set, and I have an ability to help make this incredibly exciting but incredibly stressful time in people's lives better. And the ability to be able to come into a situation, and some of those situations are really happy and some of those situations are quite the opposite. But I have the skill set to come in and take charge and guide them through this process. That's incredible. I mean, that's something that sure, I'm exhausted. Sure, I work a lot. There's a lot to it, but the ability to come be this point in people's lives where I can be this pillar of trust and confidence and guide people through what are intimate and tough times, that's something that continually lights kind of the passion within me. And like I said, I get to do it for amazing people. I get to do it for people that appreciate it and have gratitude in it and see that. And so to be able to do something that I genuinely love, there's days that I don't, but that I genuinely love, and to do it for people that in my mind are very well deserving, it's a no-brainer for me.
What do you have to say about, there's so much hype in the industry, for example, and I'm guessing, and not just real estate, this is a conversation across the board, but everyone's all uptight about, oh my gosh, I need to post my entire life on social media, and I need to be in front of the camera, and I need to be doing Facebook, and I need to be doing Instagram, and I need to be doing Zillow, and I need to be generating leads here, and I need to be spending money there, and I need to generate all this extra business from my agents if I'm a team lead or a broker, and oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, and just this complete frenzy, one, around all the tech and all these, you know, things that we need to do to generate leads and that craziness on one side, or on the other side, those that just can't seem to do it at all. Therefore, they're in the industry, but they're not making money. They're not finding clients to be able to help. So at the end of the day, they can't make a living. And so what do you have to say about all the frenzy, all the talk out of there, all the education, all the programs, all the motivations, all the technology, all the lead gen this, the lead gen that?
I, especially as I get older and longer in the business, but I've always tried to remain pretty true to this. I believe in doing what you do great, not a lot. So one of the things that I really tried to do and have tried to do over my career is start with what's obtainable. You know, obviously I can go out there, take social media. Do I think it's important to have a presence? Yes. I think at some level it's important to have a presence. But it's kind of, how are you going to use it? And what are you going to accomplish with it? I think that, once again, we talked about it before, strategy. I have social media strategies. And my social media strategies aren't, I need to be on 16 different social media sites to be effective. Realistically, I chose the first one I wanted to be at until I got into a rhythm of being incredibly effective on it. Then I added, once I knew I was doing something good, I added something else. And that's how I try and grow when I'm trying new things. Now, I'm not one to be lured by a lot of lights and bells and flashing things. In fact, that usually sends me running the other way. I'm not a latest and greatest. It can pique my curiosity, but I'm not gonna dive in. I like tried, tested, and true. I'm a little old fashioned like that. So I think it's about figuring out what pieces can and will work for you, and doing them excellently. I also think for some people, for some personalities, delegation. There's things that can be delegated to be done by others. Now, for me, authenticity is a huge piece because I think it's a big piece of my brand. You know, so when I look at it, for example, the two social media sites that I use the most are going to be Facebook and Instagram. I use them for a couple different ways. First and foremost, I use it as a relationship manager. Number one, it keeps me in contact with my clients even more so than I can possibly be on the phone. There's only so many hours in the day to call, text, and write emails. So I can keep up with what's going on in their lives. I can chime in. I can have conversations. I can know and stay connected. So as a relationship manager, I think that both of those sites are really good tools. It is also a brand manager, so that I can kind of put out there those pieces. Now, I've had people come to me and say, hey, Amanda, I'd love to take over your social media campaign. The reason I've never given it up is because realistically, I know that people can't really get Amanda McMillan through on that. And authenticity is a really big part of my brand. So that's something I've kept and held on to and kept the control of for me to do. But I do think that for some people that have the ability, whether it's lead generation or something else, to do that. When it comes to lead generation, I can say that we are actually trying it out for the first time in 17 years. The business has grown very organically over the last decade and a half. And we're very fortunate for that. That just came from a pristine reputation, a lot of hard work. So we are trying it. And once again, I started with one option, and we're seeing how it works. I don't believe in just trying a lot of things and trying to figure it out. I want to do it right. If it works, great. If it doesn't work, then I want to get rid of it quickly. So I think it's about taking each thing that you are going to try to add to your business structure, giving it a long enough time to see whether or not it's going to be worthwhile. If you do have the ability to delegate the management of it to somebody, as long as the cost is reasonable, then it's probably worthwhile in investigating. But also making sure that it's really staying true to the brand that you're coming out there and you're focusing on. But don't get, if you try and do too many things at once, you're gonna fail at more than you're gonna succeed at. So figure something out, do it excellently, and then add on as you have capacity.
Yeah, and that's so good as well. Number one, the shiny penny is, you know, so alluring, and we're in this distraction culture. So whatever the latest and greatest is, it's like, oh, let's go there. But what I hear you say that I think is a really important takeaway is that it's the philosophy that's it sounds like it's a counterculture philosophy in the sense that right now, especially in the social media world, it's all about bigger is better, bigger audiences, more likes, more followers, more things to do, adding more on. And what you're saying is I would rather have less is more. I'd rather focus on the most important, get really great at the few, one or two or three things. And I'd rather take really great care of a smaller number of clients than being after the game of maybe less quality, but more volume. So much of it, it sounds like it's getting over this belief that more is better, that more likes is better, more followers is better, and just being more focused, strategic, intentional around what's most important and how to get there.
100%. It's about simplifying and doing what you do great.
I love that. And we are so much in, would rather do a lot at maybe mediocre at best versus just taking the time and energy and ethic about getting really good at one thing and one thing at a time. So it sounds like I love so much of what you've said here. Some of the nuggets I've pulled out is one, as you said, you know, it just takes hard work. And it's really true. It seems like in this culture of hacking and shortcuts and I don't know, thinking it should be easier, it is. At the end of the day, it's just hard work. How much hard work do you put in? What does hard work sound like or look like to you?
As I always say, the good news is I don't need a lot of sleep to function. As you know, I've got a very, very packed and full life of a lot of incredible things. But I work hard, and I always go back to it. It's funny, my grandfather, who's no longer with us, he was a very impactful person in my life. He was a commercial real estate advisor that really had a big impact on Chicago years and years ago. And I remember he was tough. He was very tough. And he used to say to me that hard work is earned, not given. And that my generation thinks that it should be given. And that if you want to be great, then you have to be great. And those are words that always kind of come back to my head and resound quite a bit. Because as I said, he was a tough individual. I remember at one point having a career consultation with him, and he made a comment to say, well, what are you looking for in this next job? What do you think you should make? And I threw a number out there, and he said, well, why do you think you're worth that? Pretty much just like that. So my ethics started there. Actually, they started when I was a child. I've always just been very driven to work hard at what I do. It's something that I find incredibly rewarding. I'm not driven by the fastest route there. I'm driven by enjoying kind of the path of the structure to get there. So my days are incredibly full. I try to work smarter. I remember one of the best pieces of advice I got from a coach along the way, when I was frustrated that I was running out of hours in the day. This was even before I had children, so I put it much more into effect now, is I remember I was trying to find ways to get time back in my day. And I was so focused on the big thing of how do I get an hour back in my day that I kept just feeling defeated. I kept feeling like I was failing because there was nothing in my day that was ever going to give an hour back. But he said to me, he goes, you need to focus on where you can get minutes back in your day. If I can get you 3 minutes of every hour, then all of a sudden you're getting time back in your day. Really kind of shifting my focus to understand that. But the reality is at the end of the day, I believe in hard work. I believe that it is how we excel at what we do. But I also think that we can learn to work hard and work efficient so that when we're not working, we are enjoying what we have on the outside, because you don't want to get to the end of the day and just have work.
Yeah. And you say something there too, that it is hard work, but it's how are we efficient and effective with the work? Meaning it's not about long hours, but being efficient. Yet again, if we're so distracted and multitasking and trying to do 10 million things at once, we're probably not getting anything really done. And then at the end of the long day, it's we just feel that much more behind. So hard work. I love here that you say that part of your success is honesty, is truth, is, you know, whether you like me or not, it's not important. I'm going to tell you what I know and share that and give you my best piece of advice and wisdom. Have you always been that way? Or is that, have you grown into that? Because that's difficult to, in this day of it's based on how many likes and how you show up on Facebook and, you know, how popular you are in one way or another. So how do you fit that into everything?
I mean, looking back on it, I think I always was a little bit of that way. I was even growing up, I was, you know, obviously I wanted to be liked, but I was a little bit of the loner. You know, I kind of went a little bit my own path and not necessarily with the main crowd on everything. So I think I got very comfortable in not necessarily feeling like I was surrounded in a group. I was also raised to have an incredibly honest core. And for me, I've always said, when I'm doing my job, I have to be able to sleep at night. That's my takeaway, my priority for me. So if somebody asks me to do something that I think is unscrupulous, I very easily say no, because that affects my moral regard. On the same token, I owe that back to the people that choose to work with me. The line I use more often than not is I see honesty as a respect. If I respect somebody, then I'm going to be honest with them. Even if that costs me the client, the job, whatever that is, at least I understand that I gave them what I think that they need to know, because the alternative just doesn't end well. And I don't want to be on the end of that. So I do believe my core being this way, is since I was a little girl. I think that I've always kind of been pretty strong to this, for better or for worse. And I think that it's really kind of come out as I've grown into, the advisor that I've become.
Yeah. And just that confidence and resolution. And then you said that systems and procedures are a big part. So that how much, when you say systems and procedures, what do you mean by that?
Well, so I remember it was probably about 5, maybe 7 years ago. And I was hitting one of those kind of pivotal breaking points, in my career. Everything was going great. My success was rising more and more. But I was literally so spent, just because I was doing so much. And it got to this point where the entire business was, I knew it to a T, but it was essentially stuck in my head. So every procedure we do, every task we do, everything systematized was essentially stuck in my head, which that was getting to be a very crowded space. So one of the things that we did at that point in time was I literally started dictating and writing down every possible thing that we do, from what happens when we meet a client, what happens when we meet a buyer, what happens when we meet a seller, what happens when we go under contract, what happens when we take a listing. And I literally started just dictating all of this information on the tasks that we do most regularly. And I started getting them into lists, because I found that as I started getting this out of my head and into the hands of the team, number one, it was making everyone way more effective, because everyone knew what my level of expectation was. So it put us all on the same page. It really kind of strategized what we did, and it got it on my head, which was, I went from this point where I really felt like I was at a breaking point, because I felt literally full to capacity. And it kind of, it was like a new day in my business. I've then taken that mentality once I saw how much it helped, and really try to put it into place as much as possible. So for example, and I share this one a lot because this was a big thing for me. And I think for most business owners, it could be helpful. Emails that I write a lot, you know, obviously they're all tweaked a little bit, but if somebody reaches out to me for the first time and wants to sell a house, or a new buyer, or a referral, or something like that, where I know that the gist of the email is going to be relatively similar, I started setting up email signatures with each one of these responses. So then rather than writing the 3 paragraphs, which may only take 3 minutes, but as I said before, I try and gain back every few minutes I can, I could click on that so that the auto-populated email would come up, and then I could tweak it for the specific scenario. it was just a great way to kind of systematize that so I wasn't reinventing the wheel. And I really tried to take this mindset and this attitude towards all aspects of the business of, once again, getting it out of my head and getting it to where we're using it more effectively.
Great. And then to combine to that, what about team? Like, what sort of team support help do you have around you to support your busy, crazy lifestyle?
I'm lucky to have amazing people in all facets of my life. In the team facet, you know, is one of those, when I got to the point where I think, like most great real estate advisors, and I'm sure you can comment on this, you start at a point and you somehow convince yourself that you're the best person for every job. And you keep trying to do some of it on yourself until you break. And then when you go to grow, you don't want to give up control of things because you're certain that you can do things better than anybody, when the reality is that's not true at all. But when I went to grow the team, because I knew that we needed help, there were certain things that were really important to me. It was important to me to have people that shared my vision, the vision to be the best and not the biggest. It was important to me to find people that were going to be passionate about what they could do, that would share that honest approach, which is, it's very hard. One of the things I've struggled with the most as a business owner is finding the right people. And it's one of those things that I am very, very critical of, because I know we do things differently than a lot of our other people. I didn't ever want to have the big team where my days became micromanaging all of their efforts of who was representing my name and my brand. So it's always been a very small endeavor. It's myself. I've got two agents that work with me, as well as a director of business. So it's typically between four and five of us all together. That's small enough that we can kind of share the passion and the fire and the visions, but also small enough that I can be involved in everything that we do, so that, you know, I always make sure that if somebody's referred to Amanda McMillan, I it's not that they're just getting passed off to somebody. We work collectively together on things so that we can really, really give people the best experience that we can. And I brought in people that had strengths where I thought I had weaknesses. So I really try to explain to people that they're getting better than if they would have just gotten Amanda McMillan. And that's always been a big priority to me as we have grown the model.
And then let's segue. Well, I have one more question when it comes to the business side of the equation. And there are a lot of people that, you know, you and I would both know that are on stages that are giving tips and techniques and training real estate agents and the masses. And they may or may not have actually produced these things for themselves. And so, you know, a lot of it might be theoretical advice or what they believe to be true, but they've not been a practitioner as a top performer in the marketplace and their given marketplace. So do you hear anything that's some consistent advice that you don't necessarily agree with? One, and a backup to that is, what advice would you give? You're not on stages because you're actually working in the field every day and helping people and actually doing these things. So what advice would you be giving if you were on stage?
You know, it's great. And I think you and I met years and years ago at conferences. It's something that I always try when I can to get to, because I do like to share with an industry that's been very, very gracious to me. But you're right. It is hard because the top agents, it's hard to break away for something like that. But you still, that's why I love something like this, that I can do something like this and hopefully share. But I do think it's hard to be up there and promoting things when you're not as deeply in the business. I do think that there's a lot of people that do an excellent job in kind of bringing attention to the different aspects. The conferences, I think, are difficult, though, because I think you're trying to draw people's attention in a lot of different ways. And it's not always as impactful as it can be. As we talked about before, kind of the shiny and new, I call it the noise. I think they tend to get people more distracted more directed. And I think at the end of the day, I mean, we've spent the last 45 minutes talking about, really, in my opinion, a lot of it comes down to getting back to the basics and simplifying and doing what we do and advising and being honest. That doesn't necessarily sell tickets to conferences. People genuinely want to know, well, what's the one thing that I can do to double my business next year? Well, the one thing's probably work twice as hard. from those perspectives. So I think that is, I think one of the things that's often missed at the conferences is talking about getting back to the basics, is talking about simplifying, is talking about doing certain things awesomely, versus here's a tool, here's a product, here's something that can do that. So like I said, I think what the people that are out there doing that are absolutely doing a service, but I think it's hard to really justify exactly what it is if they're not out there practicing.
Yeah, agreed. And what I hear in that also, which has always been a belief of mine, and in fact, I was just listening to the latest Seth Godin interview on the Tim Ferriss podcast, and what Seth Godin was saying, he's giving advice. He was saying something very similar: do great work, but versus just wanting to go 1 to 1,000, just do one customer, do one client, and take amazing care of them. Put all versus spreading all your time and attention with all these different things to go from 1 to 1,000. Put all of that same energy into the one customer, the one first client, and just take care of them. And that client then will turn to 2 or 3. But understand, if you're in the life game and the professional game, the 1,000 might come somewhere later on, and that's great. But right now, just worry about the 1 to 2 and the 2 to 4 and the 4 to 6 by just these baby steps, putting the tension into the people, putting tension into the passion, putting the tension into the great work. To your point, putting the tension into, if you're going to do it really well. But we're just being pulled in so many different directions, and all that same time and energy is pulled out versus focused in.
Absolutely.
All right. So let's do a little segue. And you run a top real estate business in Chicago, and you're a mom of two beautiful baby girls. You're a wife of a wonderful husband. So now let's talk about some of what I call balancing. How are you balancing all of this? There's no such thing, I think, as balance, but we're coming in and out of these different concerns to be in a healthy and happy marriage and have healthy and, happy children. And you also have a hobby that you're passionate about and take time to do. So what is a week in the life of Amanda look like?
Well, it's funny to me because I know that, Christina, you were actually mentoring me quite a bit prior to, as I was leading up to having my first daughter. And there was a lot of fear. I think naturally all parents have fear, but there was a lot of fear of how was I going to do it all? How was I going to stay at the top of the real estate game? How was I going to stay as being a partner to a great husband? How I was going to stay very active in a very competitive horseback riding equestrian lifestyle? And I was quite afraid of how it was going to all happen. Now I am 4 years into it, knee deep in the trenches. I have a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, which are crazy, wild little women that I absolutely adore. And the reality is that I can look back on it now and you just become more efficient. To me, it was important to be able to still do everything. I didn't want to, and I give so much respect to the people that give up their careers to raise their family. I think that's a very, very tall order. And it just wasn't one that I was prepared to do. It's not that I love my kids any less. I adore them, but it was, for me, I knew that it was important for them and for my family for me to retain this part of my identity. It helps to make me the best version of myself. So really I had to learn to become efficient, and I had to learn to prioritize within that efficiency. One of the things that I still think most people are surprised to hear is I said to myself right before my eldest daughter was born, I want to put them to bed every night. I know that I'm going to miss a lot. I know that I'm going to prioritize to be there when it counts, but I know that there's going to be a lot of things that I can't be there for. And for me to be there before they go to sleep to say goodnight to them, that was a priority to me. I can tell you now, almost 4 years later, we're about 3 weeks shy of 4 years. I have been there every night to put them down, maybe with the exception of about 5 or 6 times. Some nights it's racing in at the 11th hour, to literally read one last book and kiss them goodnight. Some nights it's for bath and dinner. But that was a priority, and that's one that I set, and I made that my standing appointment with my daughters. So I think that you have to learn to use your time. I think it's also incredibly important to have amazing people in your life on all aspects. I'm very lucky to have a husband and a spouse who is not only the love of my life, but an absolute team player. He supports
me continuing to do this crazy business, which puts a lot of stress on us as a marital unit and as a family unit. His support is pivotal in what we do. He takes the lead with the girls a lot of times, and he's also running a successful business of his own. So that's important. It's important for me to have the team with their success. When it comes to the horses, which is obviously one of my personal passions, that was another thing that I couldn't give up. Because it's part of what makes me the best version of myself. It's just as important for me to have awesome people there. So I have trainers and coaches and managers and care that take care of all these aspects of my life that I have to learn to trust in 100% and manage to my own ability. But it's all about surrounding yourself with great people, and that's how you'll find the way to do all that somebody wants to.
And I know you're a little bit of a perfectionist. And so how's your process of letting go of maybe some controls and doing things the Amanda way to really embrace the great people, the great help, what they have to offer, and just let go? Like you said, just having trust.
I always say my biggest failure in my career, possibly in parts of my life, was being afraid of failure. That was one thing that really stinted myself personally and professionally in the earlier years of my business. I was so afraid to fail. I was so afraid of not being perfect that I would stop myself from trying certain things and trying to grow and trying to do things because I was afraid that it was going to go wrong. As I grew in the business, I started to learn that failure is what makes us better. It's what makes us smarter. It's what makes us stronger. And that going through failures, as long as you really assess it and figure it out, that's how we go from being good to being great. Because nobody succeeds all the time. We learn way more in the failures than we do in the successes. So really studying that and getting it. And during these failures, I started to realize that where it was tough, as I started getting the right people in my life, as I started getting people that I could trust, to understand my visions, my goals, my, you know, kind of what I was trying to accomplish, whether it was the business, the family, or the horses. Once I gained this trust, I saw that 9 times out of 10, I wasn't even the right person to be managing that piece. I saw how somebody else brought a new perspective that 9 times out of 10 was probably even better than mine because they had the ability, the time, and the energy to really focus on one aspect and say, hey, I get you've been doing it this way, but have you ever thought about this? Or it would make sense to me to do that. And once I kind of let down that guard of saying, well, my way's right, why would we consider it any other way? I started to realize that these people, these trusted advisors in my life, were really together, we were going to grow. And the more that I was able to get those right people and do that, the more relief I felt, the more contentment I felt, and the more you rely on them. Now, trust me, I've had the other happen too. I've had people that I've relied on completely and then things go wrong. And I felt like I was, excuse my language, SOL, you know, in the middle of spring market and just lost a really pivotal employee that things went wrong with. But once again, that was a failure that I learned from and I figured out and I keep going. So I think it's really about embracing when things go wrong and being okay with that and learning from it and growing from it and coming back as a newer, stronger version.
Now, what about things like cooking dinner or washing laundry or keeping the house organized? Like, how do you and Matt navigate that? Like the living part with you both have been crazy professionals and your own lives and two daughters. And
I'm going to be brutally honest here, because if he does ever hear this, then I'll be in big trouble. I don't really cook much. I used to, but that is one thing that I had to really give up with prioritizing things. It's something that I didn't enjoy as much. Luckily, he is an amazing chef. So he likes to cook and I like to eat. So it's a really good combination. I'm not the greatest with housework either. It's really, once again, as I come back to being efficient and understanding what you're good at and your priorities, that's not something that I bring to the relationship. Lucky for us, I can straighten up enough and we have great people that come in and help with that. You know, so it's really about delegating the things that either we don't have time for, or just aren't how we want to spend our time together. And I think that's, you know, when we got people to come in and start cleaning the house, that was it, is that if we had a couple of hours, our time together is precious. The last thing we want to do is go clean. I know not everyone has that luxury, but that was something that we splurged on so that we could have better quality of life once we did. And those types of things around the house. Now, in terms of all the other things, the shopping, the laundry, you know, it's a team effort. Matt definitely takes the lead on some of those things because he has a little bit more of a traditional schedule. But we all try and pitch in when we can. If I've got an earlier night, you know, I try and pick up the girls or I try and do something. But I am, as I said before, incredibly lucky to have somebody that is so supportive of what I do.
And so on that note, how important is it in your opinion to have a true life partner that is in it with you? Like, what is it? How do you guys talk about this? Are you having conversations? Like, these are our marriage, our partner goals and ambitions together. And I have this role and you have that role and we have these combined roles. And like, how do you keep it? How do you keep it together?
Some weeks better than others. it's by no means perfect. There are some bumpy roads, and there's definitely times that, you know, one of us will feel that one is working too hard and the other is taking advantage of because they're doing too much around the house and so on and so forth. So it's tough. And it's tough because time is always limited. And the reality is sometimes it feels like that's what comes back to, sometimes feeling shortchanged. But I think that it is important to, you know, I hate to use the words cause it sounds so businesslike, but to be efficient in what we do. So I think that we've tried, and once again, as I said, some weeks it's more successful than others. We've tried to know that our time together as partners is more limited than it's ever been. You know, so I think that we try to listen as well as we can. I think we try and communicate. Half the time it's over the kids kind of, you know, screaming at dinner and those types of things. But I think it's one of those things that we innately try and recognize one another as much as possible and understand what they're going through. I think that there's times that I have really tough weeks that I don't feel like I see my kids enough. I don't see my husband enough and everything like that. And I think that he understands that. I think there's times that he's dealing with bad clients on his end where he gets frustrated. You know, and I think it's really about being present. If I really had to kind of bring it back, because the reality is their lives are busier and busier. This is true for everybody. And I think that to really know that when it all comes down to it, that you've got somebody there, that if something came up, everything would be dropped. And sometimes that's a hard thing to communicate. But I think that if you can really make your partner understand that beyond all the noise, there's a central core that makes it worthwhile. I think that's what you try to obtain, and you understand that people are going to screw up, and you're going to understand that it's not always going to be pretty. And it's going to be hard. I always say that marriage is the hardest job I've ever done. I fail at it miserably sometimes. And I just try and learn from those failures, and some days we have major wins. So that's what we're always trying to perfect. You know, the other thing that I always look at our marriage is that, you know, Matt and I met when I was 24 years old. I'm a very different person than when I was 24 years old. And I always think that's the hardest part of relationships, is that we meet people when we're at certain points in our lives, and then we grow and we change and we become different people with different needs. So I'll say time and time again, marriage is definitely one of the hardest things that I've ever done in my life, but it's also one of the things that absolutely gives me the most reward.
Yeah. And isn't that with anything that what we work hardest at and we have the biggest success because it is most meaningful, but nothing I haven't found in my life that there's nothing that's so rewarding and brings me more fulfillment or security or that's not hard. I mean, it requires the work, it requires the effort. It's putting something in, and relationships are that piece as well. And is there anything more important than a relationship, which means it's going to be hard work in the best sense? Like, we love hard work, right? Mm-hmm. It's part of the ethic and who we are. And so if it's built in that, yeah, it's going to be work, but we're going to love the work. And yeah, there's days where, you know, in business, the days completely break down and break apart and you think you'll never recover, but you do. And I just see that in every category of life that, you know, what's most important, we're going to work our ass off for it.
100%. Very true.
Well, very great. We're running up against the end of our time together. So Thank you. This is great. Just, and what I love about what you've said, they're just, it's very succinct. You're very clear about your priorities, what's important to you, how you've organized your life, what you're good at, what you're okay not being good at. And I think you've made it just very simple. Like, these things are very simple, not easy necessarily, but simple. If you really boil them down to just a few axioms or principles or ethics. So what I'd like to close with, that I like to ask all of my guests, is I like to do a little myth busting. So anywhere in your career, personal life, social life, just wherever, you know, wherever you're out and about and what you see from your vantage point today, is there a myth out there that you would like to bust, just something that you think that is untrue, that you found to be different?
Well, I think the thing that I come back to, and it's probably very pertinent to myself because of how I'm wired. I spent a large majority of my life on this quest for perfection. It was part of where I grew up. It was part of my earlier years. And it was very prevalent in my earlier business years, was constantly, how do we do things perfectly? How do we find the perfect job? How do we find the perfect spouse? How do we find the perfect home and raise the perfect family? That was something that was really ingrained in me. And I think that's why this is something that I'm very sensitive to. The reality is there's no such thing. There's no such thing as perfection. There's great things. There's amazingly good things. There is so much beauty in our world. But there's nothing that's just perfect without flaw. And I think for me personally, really coming to terms with that was a time. And I would probably say, I feel like it was about 7-8 years ago that I started that. And I've really kind of grown since then. I feel like when I finally said to myself, as a diehard perfectionist, that there is no such thing as perfection, I feel like professionally and personally, I grew into a much better version of myself, because I felt like I was able to accept my own flaws. I was able to accept flaws in other people, in systems and everything. I felt like it made me more forgiving and more compassionate. And I think now, especially with the kids, they bring a whole new light into the picture of just kind of understanding that they're, if you're on this constant quest for perfection, you're missing so much of the great ride while you're on it.
That's so good. All right. One final question. And I'm in the money coaching, consulting, and advising business. And what I like to ask is, what is your philosophy about money?
I like to have it. No, my philosophy on money, twofold. I don't, and it's interesting because I'm one of those people that has lived without it. As you and I have discussed, there were quite a few years in the middle where there wasn't much, that I had to give up a lot, and I had to work very hard to get back to things. Obviously I've got a lifestyle now in which definitely has a expense to it. I try very hard not to focus on the money. With that being said, I don't believe that it defines happiness. I leave the management of it to people that are experts in that field. I make sure that in my business decisions, I don't focus on it. And I've actually found that for myself, if I have people that are counseling me appropriately on how to manage it, and by not focusing on it at the forefront of decisions, that it's put me in the most successful point of my life from that perspective. So kind of making sure that, once again, and I feel like it's a bit of a common theme, surrounding yourself with people that are experts and advisors. And then once again, making sure that you're really assessing and understanding its impact on the things that you do.
All right. And one final question, final question. And you've alluded to this a few times, but how important is getting coaching and expert advice to you? And you've said as much, but Do you invest in coaches and advice? And would you attribute, and if the answer is yes, do you attribute that as a big part of your continual success and growth, both personally and professionally?
Absolutely. I think that it's one of those things that having advisors, I'm an expert and an advisor in a specific field. I'd like to think maybe two, being a mommy advisor too. Hopefully my girls will think I'm a great advisor in that. But when it comes to real estate, I am people's advisor. I'm their consultant. I'm their go-to. I help them through their whole duration of home ownership. And therefore, I am 100% a person that wants advisors in my life. I don't want to be an expert when it comes to other things. I want to rely on other people. And for me, it's a little personal because I'm one of those people that if I know a little bit about something, I need to know a lot. It's just how I'm wired. I'm not good at being very cerebral or surface level. So for me, once again, it's timing. I don't want to manage my money because the investment that I would need to do personally, I don't have the ability to, but I can have people that I rely on to do that for me to once again, bring back quality of my life 100%. So I have advisors in all aspects of my life. I have advisors when it comes to business. I have advisors when it comes to finances. I have advisors when it comes to the horses, to the care of the horses, to the kids. I try and surround myself with people that are very, very knowledgeable on what they're doing because I think that it's very impactful on how we look at things and brings a sense of course, there's accountability levels, which are great. But for me, it's more about bringing different perspectives and me being able to trust other people to manage aspects of it.
Awesome. Well, girl, well, thank you so much. I so appreciate your time. I know everybody listening is going to take as many notes as I have. And I know you have a really busy schedule. So the fact that you carved out some time for us, myself and everyone listening is very grateful. So thank you.
No problem. You know, I absolutely think the world of you and I'm always happy to help.
If you're inspired by today's show and you would like to learn more about my money coaching, here's what I need you to do. Head over to Kristina.com/call. That's KRISSTINA.com/call and book an appointment to speak with me. In less than 30 minutes, we will get absolutely clear on why you're not earning enough no matter how hard you work, why you can never get ahead no matter how much you earn, and what you need to know in order to finally have the time and money freedom you're working so hard for. Remember, you're not alone. 95% of Americans are one life event away from financial crisis. I will be the first person to teach you why this is the case and how to be in the other 5% that has no fear around money. No one can do this alone. You need expert help. I've helped everyone from modest earning professionals to those earning 8 figures per year get off the financial hamster wheel and finally win the money game. I look forward to helping you too. Head over to Kristina.com/call and book your call with me today. I'm Kristina Wise. Thank you for spending your valuable attention with me today. We will meet again soon.